Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy, interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood. Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California Volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit caneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello. Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy, interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood. Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California Volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit caneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
How was your weekend?
It was great.
You went to some sort of, per your Instagram, which clearly I stalk, you went to some sort of pop-up Saved by the Bell thing?
That's correct, Keith.
Well, I have no idea what this is.
It's called Saved by the Max, and it's literally like a pop-up diner of the Max from Saved by the Bell.
Is that like their version of the Peach Pit from 90210?
Yeah, that's where they hung out, had burgers after school, had their dance contest, the radio station recorded from there, etc.
Where was this at?
It's right on Santa Monica in West Hollywood in some formerly empty building that they turned into the Max. And they actually did it in Chicago first. So I had heard about it in Chicago. We bought tickets way back in February, and July was the earliest reservation I could get for me and my three friends.
This is like a thing.
I signed on like right when they went on sale. Yeah.
Wow.
It was very fun, you guys.
Were they pumping music there?
Like, you know, they really weren't.
No.
Well, there was some music, and it was definitely of the time. Like, I do remember hearing Belinda Carlisle having his place on Earth.
Well, that would be 1987.
Yeah. I mean, Saved by the Bell was late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
I'm like, obviously associated with the early 90s.
Well.
It was delightful, and if you have an opportunity to go, please do.
Is it there for a while? Is it touring, basically?
I think they might do it in other cities, and I know that it does end at a certain point, I think, in the fall. But, yeah, try. Oh. Try to go.
Wow. I mean, forget, like, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z on tour. Go see the Saved by the Bell pop-up.
The food was good. That's the craziest part. Sorry, we can move on.
I wasn't expecting all this, but I'm thrilled nonetheless. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we have news about Drake, Ariana Grande, and the 2018 MTV Video Music Awards nominations.
Plus, we've got an interview with Mark Foster of Foster the People. It's a super interesting chat about the crossover success and longevity of the band's latest hit, Sit Next to Me, why he never ever thought Pumped Up Kicks would be a hit on the radio. He talks about touring with Paramore that may or may not involve s'mores and ping pong. He has some really thoughtful ideas about how we're kind of in like this postmodern age of music. As you can tell, I'm super stoked about this interview, so stick around for that a little bit later.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts. So maybe we should hit some of the biggest headlines over on billboard.com now.
Like I took a breath all of a sudden. I'm just really excited about the headlines.
Are you? Well, I heard God is a woman, and I heard that because Ariana Grande said it in her new song that she released first thing Friday morning last week.
Yeah.
She also put out the video for the song. It came out just later that afternoon. Keith and I have been bottling up all this conversation.
Yep.
About the song, about the video, just so we can unleash it here on the podcast. So we'll start with Keith. Keith, what do we think of the song?
The song?
Yeah.
I think we...
Would you like to start with the video?
Well, we can start with the song. I think it's cool. I think it's a grower, and I think, which reminds me of my initial reaction to No Tears Left to Cry. Because we had different reactions. The first time I heard that, I was just like, oh, okay, it's cool. And you were just like, I'm loving every minute of it. And now I love No Tears Left to Cry. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just one of those songs, and I think she's wisely made these songs that are slow burning and mm-hmm. are very enjoyable with repeated listens.
Yes.
And in fact, you know, No Tears Left to Cry is still huge on the radio, so she knows what she's doing. So I like the song, and I think it's a great concept. It's an interesting concept, and I think it's very fitting for where, you know, sort of she's at in her kind of pop world.
It's kind of a Madonna moment.
Kind of?
In the sense of the religious iconography in both the video and in, like, using a gospel choir at the end of the song.
Right.
She definitely had an influence there.
Well, yeah. Well, then thus speak of the video.
Mm. Well, the video is fantastic.
Yeah.
And beautiful and crazy. And you informed me is directed by Dave Myers.
Yeah.
Who also did the No Tears Left to Cry video.
There's clearly a budget involved with this video.
Oh, my God. It's just like, it's art. Yeah. It's moving, living, breathing artwork.
You still haven't said the thing that I...
What are we talking about?
The cameo in the video?
Did I miss a cameo in the video? Are you going to tell me?
What?
Is this what she was tweeting with Madonna about last week?
Yes!
I literally didn't see Madonna in this video.
Okay, well, you don't see Madonna.
Oh.
You hear Madonna.
Oh, is that
Madonna.
Her voice?
Yes.
Oh,
there's a spoken
the voice
word,
of Madonna.
There's a spoken word interlude where she comes in and says, "I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance," which, of course, is a quote that was used in Pulp Fiction, but it's like a...
Well, it's from the Bible.
It's from the Bible. it's a famous quote because
it's a quote from Pulp Fiction and the Bible.
Yeah, but people on Twitter were like, "Oh my God, it's that Pulp Fiction quote." I'm like, yes, via
and
the Bible.
And I'm like, "Oh, what are you talking about, Madonna?" So clearly there's layers that people need to discover in this video.
Yeah, so Ariana Grande, you know, she lip syncs to Madonna's voice saying this passage from the
Madonna
Bible.
Madonna should be the voice of God.
A lot of people didn't immediately know that it was Madonna because it's like this weird sort of like faux Southern accent mm-hmm. that comes through. And the first, when I first heard the song, considering Ariana had been tweeting about Madonna, telling her thank you,
mm-hmm.
I was like, all right, so did Madonna either A, send her and Pete Davidson some flowers, or B, do something with Ariana on her album?
Yeah.
And then when God is a Woman, the song was coming, I'm like, wait, so maybe she's on the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the song, because I think I heard the song's audio first on stream on Apple Music.
Yeah.
And then I watched the video the next day, because there was actually like a gap, like
12 hour
like,
gap. Exactly, it was midnight and noon.
And so I'm like, okay, I don't hear Madonna on this track. Okay, that's disappointing, because I was personally hoping for it to be like Ariana.
Really trying to like listen to the gospel sections, like, do we hear Madonna's voice in there? Or
I was like, is this like Ariana featuring Madonna? No. And then when I watched the video, I was like, is Madonna in the video somehow?
Mm-hmm.
And then up comes the interlude. I'm like, oh, snap, that's
Madonna.
See,
that's funny. I was also kind of looking for her and then didn't see her. I was kind of waiting, like, when Ariana's reaching out at the end, the, you know, Michelangelo Sistine Chapel reference at the end. I thought that could have been Madonna she was reaching for. It was not. But clearly she was featured another way.
But, you know, she was reaching out smartly to there was like a very, it was like a multi-ethnic
mm-hmm.
palette? No. Ugh. What would you call that? Scene? You know, the
pastiche?
Well, it was like a, you know, it was a Sistine Chapel.
Yes.
But with Ariana reaching out to a black woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Ariana was backed up by a bunch of, you know, I guess angels or mm-hmm. I don't know. What is this?
God, the whole video is just so cool looking.
It's really,
and
really pretty.
It's also just like, as a lady, super just amazing to see a pop star just go all out on the like feminine power thing. I mean, there's a scene where she gets pregnant, like her belly becomes pregnant. And as a mom, I got a little choked up just like she's talking about how powerful women are. And part of that power is birth. And it's beautiful.
Wow.
So, yeah, I love the song. I love the video. And I do agree with you about the repeated listens, because it's already lodged in my head from listening to it. You know, the four or five times I listened to it on Friday, then watching the video this morning. It's like she is really good at the... It's like the earworm, but not the, like, you know, you'll get sick of it because it's so, like, annoying earworm. It's not like that.
Oh, yeah, no. So this is, obviously, this is from her new album, which is coming when?
Yes, Sweetener is due August 17th.
Okay.
And so far we've heard, as we talked about, No Tears Left to Cry, which is currently number one on the Pop Songs Airplay chart. So that slow burn.
Hit number
there
one this week, yeah.
And then The Light is coming, featuring Nicki Minaj and produced by Pharrell. and now God is a woman. So we'll see what else, what other little taste we'll get before before the album comes out.
Yeah, cool.
So next up, Cardi B and the Carters lead the 2018 VMA nominations. MTV announced the nominations for the 2018 Video Music Awards on Monday, and Cardi B sits on top of the list with 10 nods.
Jeez.
The new mom and breakout 2018 rapper racked up nominations for Video, Song, and Artist of the Year, along with Best New Artist and Best Collaboration for her feature on Bruno Mars's Finesse remix.
Uh-huh.
Right behind Cardi are the Carters, a.k.a. Beyonce and Jay-Z, with 8 nominations for Ape Shit from their joint album Everything Is Love, followed by Childish Gambino and Drake with 7 apiece, Bruno Mars with 6, and Ariana Grande and Camila Cabello with 5 each.
Are Ariana's all from No Tears Left to Cry?
Yes. I mean, obviously, God is a Woman, I think, was just too close to the nominations.
Do you... you don't have this in front of you. I know you don't. What were the nominations for Video of the Year, which is generally considered like the big award? I know Childish Gambino's is America, Ape Shit from the Carters.
Mm-hmm.
Katie's actually looking this up now.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like usually the one big award that if you remember anything from the show, you're going to remember maybe what won Video of the Year.
Yeah. And so I'll just read them off. I know you already named some of them, but Ariana Grande, No Tears Left to Cry.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno Mars and Cardi, Finesse. Camila Cabello and Young Thug, Havana. The Carters, Ape Shit. Childish Gambino, This Is America. And Drake, God's Plan.
God's Plan was the one where he went out and gave money to everyone.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. They definitely made a choice there. I wonder if they considered nominating Nice for What as well and decided maybe that God's Plan was more of a unique concept for a video. Because we haven't really seen that before.
Yeah.
Just taking a budget and giving it away. Whereas Nice for What is, you know, celebrity cameos is kind of a concept we've seen before. But it's obviously a little bit, you know, different that it's a male artist featuring only female celebrities. Well, that's not that different. There's lots of examples of that.
I think it's a nice blend where you have kind of like, you know, you have sort of a very conventional, I suppose, video that is still very well done and very fun and poppy, Finesse.
Yeah.
You have an Ariana video from one of our biggest pop artists through and through, but you also have really provoking, interesting, popular videos like This Is America and Ape Shit and God's Plan.
Yeah.
I'm sure I just left someone out from there in the mix.
Sorry, Camila.
Oh, no, Mike. Oh, well, Havana, no. It's like a mini movie, and Camila, like, acts her butt off, and it's funny, and it's such a breakthrough hit. So it's, like, it's a really, like, for people that were, like, bemoaning, though, like, oh, our music video is dead, or are we, like, in a downturn? Like, no, actually, based on this, at least this category.
I mean, Childish Gambino's This Is America was number one because of its music
How
video.
How can that not win for Video of the Year?
Honestly, when it came out, I was thinking, like, there's just no chance that anybody else. I mean, and there are really, I mean... Jay-Z and Beyonce shut down the Louvre. Like they filmed in front of the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
You know, so there's lots of things to be said for all of
them. I think they'd be okay if Childish Gambino won.
I think so too.
Yeah. We're certainly not going to get a repeat. I'm like all three of those people. Bruno Mars, Childish Gambino, and
oh, it's like the Grammys all over again.
Beyonce were all nominated for
Album of the Year.
Actually, Beyonce was not nominated.
Not this year. Jay-Z was. Yeah.
And Bruno won Album of the Year versus the other two. I think this is different though because I'm not even sure who votes for the VMAs. It's like a select like blue ribbon panel.
No, fans now.
Oh,
it's fan voted.
Even Video of the Year.
Yes, and fans can vote for their favorite artists across all 8 categories right now.
Well. Camila just won.
Yeah.
Thanks for playing, everybody.
Yeah. No, we'll see.
Well, in terms of...
You know what? Actually, now that I say that out loud, it says that there's fan voting in 8 categories. Maybe Video of the Year is immune to the fan voting.
Mm. Well, while you look that up...
Okay.
and you go to vma.mtv.com, perhaps. Yes. You know, some of the biggest... some of the big Video of the Year winners in the past, because the first VMAs were in 1984... Very first video to win Video of the Year. I will give you the nominees that did not win first.
Okay.
Every Breath You Take by The Police.
Mm.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper. Thriller by Michael Jackson. That means it didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocket by Herbie Hancock.
Oh, yeah. So I've seen all of those videos.
All of them lost.
Okay.
To a very great video, but still... Thriller didn't win. You Might Think by The Cars.
Wow.
Now, you might think had a lot of, at the time, kind of state-of-the-art computer imagery. You know, like there was a miniature fly. And it was like it was very high-tech at the time. But Thriller lost video of the year?
Yeah.
WTF.
Yeah.
So, you know, for every time you have something like that...
you need to do the example. I think it's 2006.
Oh, God.
Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, I have the whole thing.
If it is shocking, you just let me know.
Oh, well...
Is it the one I think it is?
Maybe.
Who's the winner?
Panic at the Disco?
Yes.
Yeah, I think... I'm pretty sure this was the first year that they switched to fan voting.
Okay, that would make a lot of sense.
I think. I could be wrong. Because this year, 2006 nominees were Shakira and Wyclef for Hips Don't Lie, mm-hmm. Red Hot Chili Peppers with Danny California, mm-hmm. Madonna's Hung Up, mm-hmm. Christina Aguilera's Ain't No Other Man.
Oh, great video.
And Panic at the Disco's I Write Sins, Not Tragedies. And that was just, I remember seeing that, I'm like, what?
Yeah. Full disclosure, I worked at MTV at the time, which is why I know
also,
the exact
we love
year
you,
it
Brendan Urie.
Exactly.
We love Panic at the Disco.
And actually, he's like, you know, clearly lasted longer than anyone would have thought in 2006. You know, like,
yes.
12 years later, number one album. So, like, maybe MTV and their voters knew something we didn't.
I'm pretty sure that was, like, I think, I mean, I started getting kind of, like, a little bit annoyed, just, I think, partially because of my sort of grievances with Eminem in general. In the early 2000s, when Eminem won Video of the Year twice. But when Panic won, I was just like, what? And I felt like that was really when the VMAs started just kind of like implode in terms of like it's no longer about what the best video
like
was.
What culturally is the best video.
It's now just whatever fans want to win.
And to that point, you can vote now for Video of the Year on MTV.com/VMA.
Mark our words. Then Camila might just take Video of the Year home, kids. Last year's winner for Video of the Year, by the way, was...
I wonder if I know the answer to this question.
It was... Well, I'll tell you the nominees.
Okay.
The Weeknd's Reminder... Don't remember that one. Sorry, kids. Bruno Mars's 24 Karat Magic, DJ Khaled's Wild Thoughts, Alessia Cara's Scars to Your Beautiful, and Kendrick Lamar's Humble.
I guess the answer is no, I don't remember.
It was Humble.
Okay.
So that they got that one right. Ooh, and I took someone's UPS FedEx printout.
Oops.
Darn it.
That's my fault.
Well, I'm sure they'll figure it out. Well, anyway...
Charts.
Let's move on to charts, kids. This is a little bit too long of the news segment. I apologize. It's just when we talk about VMAs and Madonna inside an Ariana Grande video, all bets are off. Okay, so let's get some chart news. It's all about the Drake.
I hear he's kind of big these days.
Yeah. Well, he rules both the Billboard 200 Albums chart and the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart this week as his Scorpion album is still number one on the Billboard 200 for a second week. While In My Feelings from the album vaults from number 6 to number 1 on the Hot 100 thanks to a viral dance craze.
Have you done your video yet, Keith?
No. I think we're going to do it together.
Do the shiggy.
Aren't we doing it together?
Yeah, but let's do that.
Sure. We can get some people in the office. We could all do it together. It'll be like the Harlem Shake.
Oh.
Nope. Well, the album earned 335,000 equivalent album units in the week ending July 12th, according to Nielsen Music, of course, in the United States. And that's the largest sophomore week for an album in over 2 years. The last set to log a larger second week was Adele's 25 when it earned 1.16 million units in its second week back in
so insane.
2015. And it started, of course, with over 3 million.
Right.
And most of that was just album sales. So that ain't probably happening again. Scorpion is still largely powered by streaming activity, not album sales. And in its second week, by the way, Scorpion sold 29,000 albums in its second week.
Well,
all digital. Fun fact, that is, so Scorpion, as I'll come back to that in a second. So Scorpion is still, of course, powered by streaming activity. And in its second week, it garnered 391 million on-demand audio streams for its tracks. That's the third biggest streaming week for an album ever. Of course, a week ago, Scorpion earned 732,000 units in its first week, which is the biggest week of 2018. And again, because the album is powered by streams, it tallied 745.9 million on-demand audio streams for its tracks in its opening frame, which is the biggest streaming week ever for an album. So the thing I said about Scorpions, 29,000 copies sold. It's not in our script. Scorpion is actually the top-selling album this week. So the biggest-selling album in America this week sold 29,000 copies. Fun fact, in air quotes?
Question mark?
That is the smallest sum for the top-selling album in the week since Nielsen Music started tracking sales in 1991. And it's only the third time we've had like the biggest selling album of the week sell less than 30,000 copies.
We should also say that, you know, well, you'll probably get to this. I was just going to say another big release this past week was Future's Beast Mode 2, which was
streaming only.
It had no opportunity to be on the top album sales chart.
Future's Beast Mode 2 debuts at number 3 on the Billboard 200, all from streaming activity, and that actually makes it the highest charting streaming-only album ever. It surpasses the number 8 debut and peak of
Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book.
Yeah.
Let's say it together.
Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book. Another thing, speaking of all these rappers in the top 10, so we have Future at number 3, we've got Drake at number 1. In fact, the entire top 6 albums on the Billboard 200 are rap albums, which that's the first time that's ever happened. Hmm. And 9 out of the top 10 albums are all rap albums.
Wow.
That's never happened either. The only thing that is not rap in the top 10 is the Greatest Showman soundtrack.
Incredible.
So, had it not been for the soaring vocals of Zac Efron and Hugh Jackman and Kayla Settle, we would have had an all-rap top 10. So, Katie, you might be wondering, why is this possible?
Yes, why? How? Why?
It's the power of streaming.
Yes.
And also... Because and I just say the power of streaming as if you listening knows what that means. Well, what that means is hip hop does extraordinarily well on streaming services. That is the vehicle in which a lot of people who love hip hop will absorb new music. Doesn't really work so much with country and pop and rock. Like that is just. I mean, you look at the top of the Apple and Spotify charts, and it's just hip hop dominated, and. I'm still curious. I'm like, there's got to be some amazing study. Why? It's like, why is it? Why is like hip hop so dominant on streaming services? Whereas like, are we just like, you know, like 4 or 5 years behind? Like in five years from now, will we see, you know, the new Florida Georgia Line at the top of the Spotify chart for like a month?
Because like, hip hop is popular with young people and young people are the first adopters.
And that's sort of what happened, you know, back when people, you know, first started listening to first started buying music through iTunes or first started buying CDs through the internet. The stuff that we saw react the most actually at the time was youth-oriented stuff, but also a lot of alternative and college music. Not just rap. And that was because you had a lot of like alternative music was very popular with like college kids who had access to broadband and internet.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, the music of choice of college kids and high school kids is hip hop.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And that's just dominant.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of streaming being very powerful on the album charts and with hip hop, but also the fact that nothing of note in terms of pop, rock, or country came out in terms of albums on the street date that impacted this week's chart.
Yep.
As opposed to a week ago when there were new albums from Florence and the Machine and the Gorillaz that debuted in the top 10, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll all change next week. I don't know.
We'll see.
We'll see. And now, speaking of all that hip-hop, we're going to go to an interview with... not someone from the world of hip hop. It's time for an interview with Mark Foster of Foster the People. Mark dialed in to the Pop Shop as he was en route to a show, actually, and we had a super super interesting chat. The band is actually currently enjoying a radio hit with "Sit Next to Me," which was first a hit on our alternative songs airplay chart last year. The song came out in August, September. And then became a hit on alternative radio. But now it has since crossed over to the pop songs airplay chart.
Such a fun song.
Mark goes in deep in our chat about how top 40 radio is just really weird right now. And that nobody knows what's going to work at pop radio.
Right.
He also talks about why he never ever thought that the band's breakthrough hit Pumped Up Kicks would be a radio hit. And The answer may surprise you because I asked him and I was expecting him to say, oh, you know, we just never thought like, you know, people would like it. He actually had like a scientific sort of type answer about the way pop songs are structured. And that doesn't, and he's like, this wouldn't work on the radio.
He's the new Rivers Cuomo trying to break down the formula of a pop hit.
It's, I mean, I think he's like the, he was just like the perfect guest for the pop shop. So,
we should have a guest co-host sometime.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Mark,
we'll see you when you hear this.
Mark, if you're listening, come on back. Anyway, so there's lots of deep thoughts about the state of pop music and how everything is working and also making s'mores and playing ping pong with Paramore. So that's in there too. So anyway. Take a listen to our interview with Mark Foster of Foster the People. Come over here and sit next to me. We can see when things go naturally. Just say the word and I'll pop the scene. Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. Mark Foster of Foster the People. How's it going, sir?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm good. I'm in New York right now. Just heading to the Barclays Center for soundcheck.
Yeah, you're now, do you have a driver? Is this like a van scenario or is this like a Lyft?
I got an Uber, actually.
See, yeah. Rock stars, they're just like us. Well, first off, congratulations on the big success of your single Sit Next to Me. The track has really kind of had this extraordinarily, you know, long life. It was already a smash on our alternative songs airplay chart last year. And then has since crossed over to the pop songs chart, and it's you know in recent times has been like a big hit on pop radio. What's it been like for you seeing, you know, how this song has grown and expanded its reach, you know, from its release last summer? Like, what's it been like to see that for you?
Yeah, it's been kind of amazing, really, just because it's been really surprising for me. Like every week now. Just getting an update, you know, that it's like continually growing and, you know, has a bullet at radio. And I'm just like, what? You know, it's been on the radio for like 8 or 9 months. It's just cool that it's connecting with people. And it's a funny thing too. I think like with you know, American radio in particular, you know, a song like this, I mean, it's been a song, I think, that, like, when you would hear it for the first time at radio, I mean, it's a ballad, it's like a mid-tempo ballad, basically, that you wouldn't say, oh, this is going to react right away, you know, it's kind of a sleeper. But it's one of those things that I think with American radio, these things take time, you know, building something up at alternative, it always surprises me how long it takes for people to... for a song to be able to get 4 or 5 listens by a single person that listens to the same station. You know, it could take a few weeks before somebody starts to really connect the dots that, oh, this is a song that I like, and okay, this is a song that's lost to the people. You know, whereas I think in maybe the UK, so, you know, at Radio 1 or something, that a song has a much shorter lifespan, you know, pretty much even like a hit song, unless it's like a smash, unless it's like a monster, it's going to have, you know, maybe 6 to 8 weeks. It's going to live on the radio, and then we're going to move to the next singer, Triple J in Australia. I think it's, you know, it's different, but US radio, you know, it's to have a song that's on for this long though is you know, surprising. It's cool.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
good thing.
Clearly, you know your radio, because, yeah, I mean, and I think in the UK, just because it's like a much smaller country and, you know, everyone listens to, you know, effectively kind of, I mean, not the same stations, but I mean, there's only a certain number really that are super powerful. And so, you know, yeah, things move a lot faster, you know, in the UK, but here it's like so weird because we have so many different formats and, you know, it takes... you know, some, for whatever reason, it takes multiple listens, you know, for it to catch on. And that's why we see, especially lately, I mean, now I'm really going deep because I work in charts at Billboard, so I could really fall into a rabbit hole with you, and I'm not going to do that. But there's a lot of songs lately, like Dua Lipa's New Rules has been out for like a year and it's still on the charts. Lau's single has been like on the charts for a year. And, you know, your single has effectively been on the radio for almost a year on different formats. So it's weird how U.S. radio is just so kind of slow turning sometimes, but that can really work to your advantage, like it has done with this single. Moving on, though, I could spend forever on that. You know, you've been down this like crossover road before, you know, with Pumped Up Kicks, obviously, you know, when it crossed over from rock to pop radio. But, you know, is it different this time around? Is it not as like sort of weird going from rock to pop, or is it not any different at all, you know, this time?
I mean, yeah, it's completely different. I think, you know, that was 7 years ago. Yeah. And I would say that, you know, we were a new band. Nobody really knew anything about us. And Pumped Up Kicks kind of came out of nowhere and continued to kind of surprise everybody, I think, including myself. And, you know, that song was never, I mean, I never in a million years thought that song would be played on the radio at all, let alone be played on pop radio. And
why didn't you think that it would not be played on the radio? Did you not think it sounded like a hit, or was there something else?
I mean, even just considering like radio, you know, kind of like the unspoken rule of radio, you know, you want a vocal to come in like 5 to 10 seconds on a song that's going to be played on the radio. Pumped Up Kicks has an intro that's almost a minute long before the vocal even comes in.
Yeah, that is super unusual, actually, yeah.
And there's, you know, it's got a lot of space. And at that time, especially on pop radio, I mean, you rarely even heard guitars on pop radio, let alone a band. You know, it's pop radio normally kind of really kind of super serves the pop artist, a singer or a rapper. And something with like, you know, an electronic, more electronic production, but like you rarely hear kind of a band. So, I mean, that song was pretty, I would say it was really left to center and kind of came out of nowhere. And radio was in a very different place back then. And then kind of from that point, I would say that radio started to come around, and I would say that even, you know, that song opened up some doors for bands to be heard on pop radio a little bit more. You know, with, you could see with like Gautier and then Capital Cities, you know, this last, and then Arctic Monkeys. Actually, I don't know if they crossed, but I think they did.
A little bit. Not as much as you.
A little bit. And then, you know, and then obviously last year, Portugal the Man.
Yeah, totally.
And so, you know, I would say that now radio is definitely in a different place, and I think that people's tastes are in a different place, that nobody really knows what's going to work at pop radio now. Nobody, it could be anything, you know, it could be
a Cardi B track,
you know, Post Malone.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be Cardi B, it could be, you know, it could, you know, just there's strange, people are, I think, are being constantly surprised, and which I love. I mean, I think that, you know, we've been in a postmodern age of music for a while, that I think people that listen to music now, and you can see it when you look at the festival lineups, who's playing, that there's everything from EDM to hip hop to like, you know, trap like Atlanta, like Dirty South stuff, to rock stuff, to really avant-garde left of center stuff, and people that go to those festivals are going to see all of it. And I think that's kind of a reflection on where people's tastes are now, that it's not, people aren't genre specific anymore, which I think is so great and so healthy. And you're also seeing that, you know, like Kanye being a big champion of that for a long time now. I mean, even going back to like Stronger, when he, you know, took Daft Punk and started to use kind of pull from electronic music and bring it into hip hop, or Flashing Lights, or, you know, anything from that. I mean, there's a lot of cross-pollination within genres now, which is something that as a band we've always been interested in doing as well, which, you know, on Sacred Hearts Club, on our newest record,
it totally blurs genres. Like, it's kind of all over the place. Like, there's pop, there's rock, there's kind of hip-hoppy beats at certain points. It's kind of, I you know,
totally.
We sort of classify it as an alternative album, you know, for our charts, and you know, your home base is alternative radio, but, you know, really when you listen to the album, it's like, you know, there's elements of lots of stuff in it. And I would imagine that's because, you know, you and you know, you yourself are, you know, is sort of a fan of all sorts of music. Like, that just sort of seeps into your consciousness because you just like all sorts of kinds of music, and that shows up in your music, I imagine. Well, anyway, that wasn't really a question. That was just me making a statement.
I mean, working on that record, we actually had two records, basically. We kind of separated the hip-hop electronic stuff with the more... We had more kind of psychedelic guitar stuff and more rock stuff. And we separated them at one point in time. We were going to put out two EPs or two records that were, I guess, more stylistically cohesive. And then it was this big conversation. I remember talking to Rick Acosti about it, the producer, and a bunch of other friends at Paul Epworth and different people that were in music, just like, what do you think is a good way to, release this music? Because not all of it works together, but, should we keep it separate or should we try to do something and have it all kind of make it more like a roller coaster? When you put on the record, you don't know where it's going to go. And that's what we decided to do the latter, put a song like Lotus Eater, which is like, really kind of influenced by the Ramones, and then hard cut that into this weird 1950s David Lynch prom type kind of psychedelic ballad, and then have that go into a song like Heart in the Paint that I did with John Hill and Dahi, and that's something that's like way more kind of forward-thinking hip-hop electronic, but approaching... being approached by a songwriter. And so it just kind of, it was fun to put that together and try to make it all work. At the end of the day, it's kind of the main conversation, which is like, well, look, this is how people listen to music now. Like, this is, where you skip from, listening to like, Lil Yachty to like listening to, Ennio Morricone to Giorgio Moroder to, I do.
Yeah, I was like really, really cool, interesting people do. Because I don't know if that's the typical kind of playlist for the average person, but yeah, I see that. I hear you.
That's my playlist.
Yeah. Your playlist is going from John Carpenter's theme for Halloween, and then we skip over to Selena Gomez, and then we go back to some Bach. It's like the cool blend. That's typical, right? I don't know, dude.
Listen. Just a normal Sunday.
Just normal average Sunday. Just doing chores around the house. It's cool. Sorry. Okay, so...
But yeah.
specific questions, because I realize I'm probably keeping you on the phone a little bit too long, but you're on tour right now with Paramore. The obvious question, what's it been like touring with them? Did you, were you friendly with Paramore? Did you guys know them at all, really, before touring?
One of my bandmates, Phil Danu, actually, I just found this out. I knew that he knew Zach, their drummer, but I didn't know how. But he produced an EP for Zach when Zach was doing like side projects. So they know each other, and other than that, I hadn't met any of them, it was just. I think that there's been kind of love there for a while, just between the two bands. But we kind of walked into this, really just fresh, just really kind of shaking hands and introducing ourselves.
It's like, hi, we'll be touring together. What's your name again? Haley. Great to meet you, miss. Sure, it wasn't like that.
But it's been really great. I mean, they're good people. We all get along right away. And it's been kind of funny, too, because the last few venues we played have been kind of like summer camp vibes. Like, the venues themselves have had, like, ping pong and bonfires afterwards with s'mores.
Wow,
and, like,
okay. That's cool.
Weird bicycles and, like, scooters and all the stuff laying around and basketball hoops and whatever. So it's been kind of like after... before the shows and after the shows, we've all just been kind of like hanging together, doing weird activities.
Making s'mores and playing ping pong as you do on tour. That's
making s'mores and playing ping pong as you do.
That could be a song lyric. I think we can make that happen. Maybe not.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. I was kind of curious, like, while you're on the road, do you have time? Like, is that when you like to write music, or do you sort of want to dedicate, like, separate time away from touring and sort of make it a self-contained thing outside of the road?
I've done that before, doing it for the money on Sacred Hearts Club, and also SHC actually started on tour. Doing it for the money, I started on, like, on the Torches tour, like, probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Wow.
I had my own bus, and I put a studio on the bus and traveled around trying to write stuff for our second record. And that was really the only idea that ended up seeing the light of day. 5 years later, I ended up kind of icing found that the basis for that track on a hard drive somewhere. I was like, you know, we should finish this. And but for the most part, you know, I've found that it's pretty hard for me to write on tour. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the movement of the bus, or it's just like after playing a show, my brain is kind of reeling, and I just want to like play video games.
Yeah.
Or like and
play ping pong
and chocolate cupcake and go to bed.
Yeah.
but it's something that I'm still trying to figure out. You know, I know Ryan Tedder from One Republic. I mean, he tours around with an Airstream that he pulls behind their bus, and he has a studio in it. He's been doing that for years, and I know that he's like locked up. I mean, he is kind of a freak on a whole other level, though. I mean, his work ethic and how prolific he is. He's always in the studio, always songwriting. But that's something that I look up to. You know, I think that having maybe a separate space like an Airstream, or having something that I can kind of like close the door and not have people like shuffling by grabbing socks from the back lounge or whatever.
Yeah.
you know, might be a little bit more conducive to being creative, but
yeah, then all of your songs will
in
just
the meantime,
end up being about
kind of,
socks.
Honestly,
yeah.
When I'm on tour, and then when I'm home, I kind of explode into the studio, you know, and I just built a home studio, and have like my own proper studio for the first time in my life, where I can track drums. And,
wow.
You know, I have a board, and I have a ton of outboard gear. It's everything that I need, basically. And so, when I get home from this tour, I've got a bunch of music that I'm going to be jumping into. And then Isom Innes, my bandmate, myself, we've been producing stuff together for a long time, and we've been working on some stuff for that band Coin. Doing some stuff with them on their new record, and have, you know, quite a bit of like production and writing stuff aside from Foster the People that's like kind of lined up that we're going to be doing, you know, when we get home from this tour. So, you know, it's going to be busy.
Wow, you're super busy. Well, last thing, since it's now been effectively like 7.5, you know, years or so, basically since Pumped Up Kicks kind of like, you know, put you onto the map, and you know, you've toured so much and you've been around the block, you know, a whole bunch of times, you know, is there like one really big lesson that you feel like you've learned from this whole experience so far, for you? Like, what's like been like some really great teachable thing that you've learned? I know that sounds like a big huge question. It doesn't have to be crazy. I was just kind of curious.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, what's like a good lesson you've learned?
Well, I would say that, you know, I come from kind of the old school like love of music, how things were when you went to a record store and you bought an album because the artwork looked cool, and you maybe heard about the band from a friend and you just tried it out and brought it home and unwrapped it and put it in. And and so I would say that kind of when, you know, as it pertains to making records, I love to make albums, full albums, front to back, and disappear for a while and really dive in and really pull my hair out and try to make it perfect and tell a story and all of those things. And I think that one of the biggest lessons that I learned, even just coming off the heels from Between Torches and Supermodel, was that, you know, if you take a break for 2 or 3 years, or not a break, but if you're in the studio writing a record and then you come back out, you have to re-educate everybody. Again, of who you are, what you're all about, what you're doing. And I think that it's somewhat of an uphill battle sometimes, where it's not like people's attention spans, they're not like waiting around like back, you know, in the 60s when they're like, oh, you know, the Beatles are coming out, the new record, or the Beach Boys, or whatever it is. I can't wait to hear this. And it's like people are talking about it. Not even the 60s, even like the 90s.
Yeah.
Was like that. You know, I remember being like, okay, you know, Soundgarden's coming out with a new record or whatever. And knowing the date, knowing when it comes out, like months in advance.
It was an event. Showing up literally, like there'd be billboards with like release dates on it. And, you know, the Rolling Stones has a new album. Like it was always like you knew the date like months in advance. Sorry.
You knew the date. It wasn't like, oh, shit. You know, The Weeknd just dropped a record at midnight last night.
Yeah.
Check it out. You know, it was. You know, so I think that, you know, one of the big lessons that I've learned, I guess, in terms of just being, which is also amazing, is just that art, because of the digital nature of how everything is and with streaming and whatever, is that you can be more fluid and you can act quicker. And something that, which is, for me, instead of locking myself away, you know, trying to go up on, you know, a mountain and come down like Moses with the Ten Commandments and be like, look what I've been, like, you know, all grizzled and like haven't showered and like, look what I've been up to. Just like curmudgeon with this, you know, piece of work. That it's just like, if I finish a song, I want to put it out. And so that's kind of where my headspace is now. I just want to finish music, put it out. Put it out as a single. And I guess in some ways it is going back to the 50s.
Yeah, totally.
You know, where it was like kind of the age of the single. You know, you can put out a single, like just continue to just be prolific. I think we're in the age of being prolific. And whoever is kind of the squeakiest wheel in terms of being prolific, which is, I mean, not to go super, super deep and long on this. I probably already got.
No, you're good.
But is why I think hip-hop has just been dominant for the last few years, because in hip hop, you know, you have hundreds of people that are beat makers that are sending their coolest stuff to Drake or sending their stuff to, you know, who in name your MC.
Right.
And they get to like pour through 100 beats, pick, you know, one or two that they like, jump into a vocal booth, write a verse, lay down the vocal, and then like they could put that out a couple days later if they wanted to. And that's what's been happening. I mean, you know, especially someone like Drake, it's just his name is always on the radio. He's always got something new coming out. It's been like that for years.
Yeah.
Whether it's his own stuff or whether he's collaborating and jumping on somebody else's track, which is something that I think NBA needs to do more often. You know, I would love to do a song with Portugal the Man. I'd love to do a song with Cage the Elephant. Like, I would love to do, you know, a tune with MGMT. I would love to like do something with Vampire Weekend or Arctic Monkeys, or I think the cross pollination, you know, with alternative artists, I think there's a lot of room for bands to start collaborating together.
Yeah, that doesn't exactly happen very often.
In a similar fashion, like kind of like just like what I did with the Knox.
Yeah.
You know, we just did a song together, and, you know, it's with the Knox and Foster the People, and, you know, that's, I think there's a, you know, the artists that are maybe more on the fringes should start collaborating together. I think it's just, you know, it's fun. What we do is fun. It doesn't have to be all like lone wolf, super competitive, super secretive. It's like we're lucky to be able to make music, and you know, I find it to be really fun to collaborate with people that, you know, come from a different background for myself. So that's something that I think in the future, you know, something that I'm really kind of shooting for.
Well, this has actually been a really enjoyable conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time. I look forward to your collaboration with Drake in your home studio later this year. maybe it'll be set to some sort of, you know, interesting atmospheric Enya music from the 80s. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. But thank you so much, Mark, and, you know, have a great time on the rest of the tour, and, much success to you in the future. Thank you again so much, Mark. It was such a joy, talking to you, and really, like Katie said, we would love to, talk again. I mean,
he can be the new Tyler Oakley, just roll in and guest co-host.
And Mark's pretty sassy too in the interview.
Yeah.
Mark also has very specific, interesting tastes. And I mean, as you just heard, like I joked with him because he was talking about like, oh, you know, you can go from like a Ennio Morricone to like, you know. And then he, like, name-checked, like, a pop artist, and he name-checked something else. And I'm like, I think you might do
right.
that. I don't know if the average person
the regular person
does.
Talking about spaghetti westerns and Ariana Grande.
But with someone like him, it's like, man, I would love to, like, go to, like, Amoeba Records and, like, go through, like, oh, like pour
digging through the crates.
Digging through the crates with, like, Mark Foster. And, you know, because clearly you could fall into a rabbit hole,
yeah.
like a pop music rabbit hole, and just get lost. Anyway. Now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Years ago, this week, Armageddon, the album, hit number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart. Back when everything was just called something, the album, when
yeah.
it was a soundtrack. Kind of like Black Panther,
the album.
Well, the set, which contained the smash hit I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith, which you just heard a snippet of to intro this segment. The album spent 2 weeks. The album spent 2 weeks atop the list, starting on July 18th, 1998, and was one of three chart-topping soundtracks that year, alongside two albums you may have heard of, Titanic and City of Angels. It was 1998 was a huge year for soundtracks. And granted, only three of them actually hit number one, but there were so many more that were huge albums in that weird transitionary time where the only way most people could actually get a song they wanted was to go and buy the album
mm-hmm.
because the music industry had effectively like killed the commercial single. Like you couldn't go buy CD singles really anymore, and iTunes hadn't existed yet. And so if you wanted to get that hot new, you know, whatever song, the music industry basically forced you to buy an album.
Yeah.
So lots of soundtracks that really should have never existed or
That's
done well.
That's why I owned the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack.
So, I mean, for some reason, people went and bought the Godzilla soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, for that terrible Diddy Jimmy Page thing. Puff Daddy, I mean.
Yeah, at the time it was Puff Daddy featuring Jimmy Page. Come with me.
What a time.
Oy. Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
That was Kashmir,
yeah.
wasn't it? Oy. what a time to be alive.
Indeed.
When Puff Daddy could sample a
former member of Led Zeppelin.
Well, anyway, that was coming. That was also. We didn't mean to fall into a bashing on Puff Daddy. We are so sorry. That's not. We are not. That's not what we're doing. We're talking about Armageddon. Notably, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing was the first and so far only number one Billboard Hot 100 hit for Aerosmith. The track, which was written by a friend of the pop shop, Diane Warren, mm-hmm. hit number one on the September 5th, 1998 Hot 100 chart and spent 4 weeks atop the list. So there you have it. 20 years ago this week, Armageddon, the album, hit number one on the Billboard 200 chart. Alrighty.
You know, soundtracks are really having a renaissance now, too. Like, they're back, but in a different way.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have The Greatest Showman, which has sold more than a million copies,
mm-hmm.
which can still prove that some albums, if they are the right kind of album, can still sell well.
Mm-hmm.
The Mamma Mia 2 soundtrack just came out a week ago,
mm-hmm.
Featuring ABBA hits performed by Cher and Andy Garcia and Meryl Streep and
yes.
a whole raft of other young people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Are there other soundtracks I'm not thinking of that are coming?
Black Panther,
yeah.
Oh, and, like that are coming out?
Yeah, I can't really
well,
think
Well, I
of
guess
them.
The Superfly one was a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
as
right.
Well.
The future kind of mm-hmm. curated one, which didn't really impact as big as Black Panther.
Was not Black Panther level. No.
Well, we digress. So what
this
song?
This whole show's been a digression.
But those are the best kind of shows. So what song should we go out
oh,
on,
man.
Katie?
The people should probably hear that Godzilla Diddy song now.
Oh, since we wouldn't have played it, yeah.
yeah.
Well, I guess we can go out on Come With Me, no?
Is that what it's called? Come With Me? Come With Me, yeah.
All right, see you guys next time.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit ca-neighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.